Hallo. Etwas Glück to go, bitte.
Gern. Zum Rubbeln oder Aufreißen?
Hauptsache schnell. Ich kann mein Glück kaum erwarten.
Die Lose von Lotto Bayern. Zum Rubbeln oder Aufreißen. Glück to go. Der schnelle Weg zum Glück. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand. Nur in deiner Lottoannahmestelle.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Infos unter biök.de.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
The town of Prodigy doesn't have its own school. The nearest one is in Tenwood, where the Tenwood Elementary School had been built into the site of Tenwood Junior and Senior High School. That's where I ended up going to school for pretty much my entire life. Both of my parents, at this point in their lives, worked long days and wouldn't be around to pick me or my brothers up right after school ended, and we weren't allowed to just wait around on school property. It was some kind of policy. The school buses also didn't go all the way to Prodigy, only to a bus stop halfway in between the two towns, so that wasn't an option either. I don't even think the bus would have been able to drop us off at home, even if it did go to Prodigy, since we were so young. When I got old enough to drive, this wouldn't be much of a problem, but at the time, I was only about 7 years old. It was pure luck, as they say, that my parents found Charlie's ad in the newspaper barely a week before we started school that year. Charlie Webb, babysitter and nanny, please call the number. Charlie was fresh out of school. If I remember right, she rented a place in Tenwood to babysit and nanny out of while she saved up the money she would need to open up her own daycare. She had a degree in early childhood education to boot, which was listed on her ad, so my parents called her right up and we met her for the first time the day before our first day of school that year. She was tall, with pin-straight, long, red hair and a big smile. I thought she was nice. My parents liked her too, and so they signed us up for a daycare. Me and my brothers would stay with Charlie every day after school, until one of my parents was off work to come pick us up. Some days, there would be a couple of the kids there as well, already running around in the house and playing when we got dropped off by the school bus. There were a lot of days that it was just the three of us though. Most days, Charlie let us out into a fenced backyard and let us play, running around and coming up with her own games. Her house was right at the edge of Tenwood, nearly backed up against the sparse woods that surrounded the eastern side of town. The fence was chain link, and tall enough that us naughty kids could easily climb over it, but we could still see into the trees beyond it. The beginning of the trees was somewhere between 20 and 30 yards away from the fence, and all the trees were tall and skinny at the front. I'd never been in the actual woods by that point, and to this day, I've only been inside the Tenwood Forest once, and I don't plan on going back, so I had no idea if all the trees were like that or not. I like to think the trees got thicker and more forest-like the further you went in, just because it seemed more magical that way. That particular afternoon, it had just been me and my two brothers at Charlie's house. All three of us were kind of just doing our own thing, running around by ourselves when I walked past the fence and something caught my eye. Kind of in the way where, when you're driving, you think you see an animal on the side of the road, it snaps up all your attention immediately. I stopped to turn my head and look, and once I realized what it was, I walked closer to the edge of the yard, pressing my hands up against the fence. There was a woman, standing just at the edge of the trees, in a striped blue sundress with lace around the neckline and hem. The sunlight bounced off her hair, which looked strawberry blonde, and tumbled down her back in shiny, neat waves. She had big, shiny hoop earrings on as well, which swayed every time she turned her head and caught the light in a nearly blinding way, filling my eyes with sunspots and solar flares. I wrapped my fingers around the metal of the fence and watched her, practically pressing my face right up against it. She wasn't moving, just standing next to the trees, looking out on the open, empty space at the edge of town. Occasionally, she would tilt her head or turn it to survey something a little to one side, but that was it. she never looked at me, so after a while, I kind of got bored with watching her. I didn't feel like I was in any particular danger, since she wasn't looking at me or trying to talk to me, and she definitely wasn't coming closer to the fence. She just stood as still as I'd ever seen a person stand. I thought it was weird, sure, but I'd seen people do weirder things than stand next to a tree before. I got bored, watching her do nothing. At some point, my brother came by to ask me to play tag, and stopped to stick his face right up against the chaining fence and ask me what I was looking at. I shoved my hand through the fence, wiggling my arm through up to the wrist, pointing in the direction of the trees, and told him there was a girl out there. He squinted his eyes and scrunched up his face like he was straining to see before he turned to me and said he couldn't see anyone. He asked me to come play again. I glanced back at the girl again, wondering how he didn't see her. But she wasn't doing anything interesting, so I let go of the fence and ran off to play with hardly a second thought. That night was a Friday night, so my mum came to pick us up from Charlie's house sooner than normal. I didn't give the girl by the trees a second thought as we picked up our bags and coats and piled into the car to head back home to Prodigy. I don't think I even thought of her for the entire rest of the weekend. We were back at Charlie's house on Monday afternoon. The bus dropped us off and Charlie was waiting for us outside the front door, right at the edge of the porch. It was a little odd, because she never waited for us outside like that, but not wild enough that I put much thought into it. I was just glad to be out of school. She let us inside, gave us some snacks, and asked if we wanted to go play outside again because it was so sunny and warm. The three of us were pretty unruly kids, so of course we said yes. We had to finish eating first, so we sat at the kitchen table and Charlie waited on the couch in the living room, which was only a few feet away. She didn't let us watch cartoons very often, and certainly not while we were eating. Normally, she wouldn't even have the television on. Sometimes she even hid the remote. Today, though, she sat on the edge of the couch, leaning forward to be closer to the television as she flipped to the local news channel. I finished up my food, sitting at the table as patiently as a 7-year-old could for my brothers to finish so we could go outside. Because Charlie was still listening to the news, I started looking at the things on the table to entertain me. The first thing to catch my eye was a newspaper. I was a big reader as a little kid, and, at the risk of sounding like I'm bragging, was pretty advanced at a young age. I couldn't understand the newspaper as a 7-year-old, of course, but I wondered if Charlie would think I would look smart for reading the newspaper, so I reached out and pulled it closer to me. On the front page, a pretty, black-and-white, smiling girl with neat, wavy hair and hoop earrings stared back at me. Before I could try to figure out what words follow the picture, Charlie was behind me, moving the newspaper to the counter in the kitchen and announcing that she was unlocking the back door. I had nearly completely forgotten about the girl in the trees, and seeing what I believed to be a picture of her had me shocked to argue when Charlie took the newspaper away. Instead, I just followed my brothers through the kitchen and towards the back door. For most of the time that we were outside, I didn't even go near the fence. We played hide-and-seek with Charlie, we moved on the swings, and eventually we ended up just running around and doing whatever we wanted on the playset. Charlie's playset was one of those that you could climb up into, with a little platform at the top and a slide to get back down. It wasn't until I was at the top of the platform, about to go down the slide again for probably the 100th time, that I looked out over the fence. The girl was standing by the trees again. I could see her easily from where I stood at the top of the playset. I didn't like that she was standing in the same place. My wild imagination couldn't help but picture her standing there amongst the trees for the entire weekend, day in and day out. That wasn't really the part I didn't like, though. The girl looked sick. Her dress was smudged and dirty, and even from a distance, her skin had an almost greenish hue. Her hair seemed so much less bright and shiny than it had, and no longer hung in neat, even waves down her back. Now, it was ratty and dirty, like she had been rolling around in the dirt. As I looked at her longer, I could see a series of dark, trickling stains down her legs. The worst part, though, was what I could see of her eyes. She was far enough away that I couldn't see anything in full detail. Her skin all over her face was mottled and her mouth hung open just enough that it looked wrong. Her eye sockets weren't quite empty. There was some kind of squishy-looking pale remains in there, counteracting the darkness in the hollow spaces behind her eyelids. And she still just stood there, staring into empty space. For a moment, anyway. There was no more movement from her, until her shoulders jerked a bit upwards, once, twice, and soon enough, she started to shake. She raised her hands, tilting her head down to look at them. It hit me the second I could pick out a dry, raspy sound of my brothers playing around me, that she was trying to cry. She cried and shook, and she stared down at herself with missing eyes, and I slid down the slide and ran inside as fast as I could. When Charlie came after me, I told her there was a lady behind a fence and that she scared me. Charlie frowned, but immediately grabbed a phone and ushered me back outside to ask if I could point out the lady. I think that, as we were walking, she was holding her thumb over the emergency call button in case it ended up being some crazy person watching a bunch of kids. At first, I didn't want to go back outside, but it felt better with Charlie holding my hand and going with me. We walked across the yard and reached the fence, where Charlie stood next to me, both of us staring at the trees on the other side. The lady was still standing there, green and bruised and dirty. Charlie was quiet for a long moment before she knelt down before me and gave me a big smile. "See, there's no one out there," she said as she rubbed her hand up and down my back. "Someone must have just walked by and now they're gone." I was horrified. Before I knew it, I was crying. The girl was still right there, all sickly and dirty and heaving, like someone out of a horror movie that I wasn't supposed to see. How could Charlie not see her? I cried and screamed until Charlie had to call one of my parents to clock out of work early to come get me because I was inconsolable and had cried so hard I was getting sick. I'm sure that when my dad showed up, Charlie told him what had happened as best as she could, because I know I certainly didn't talk about it. Everyone tried to ask me what had set me off, but I said nothing. I don't think I could have if I tried. When I tried sleeping that night, the blanket pulled up over my head. I kept seeing her face like she was inches away in the dark, hovering over me in my blanket cocoon, staring me down with liquefied eyes. The next few days that we went to Charlie's house, I avoided the backyard. I didn't want to look out past the fence and accidentally see the woman again if she was still out there. I adamantly wanted to play inside and actively avoided looking out of the kitchen window, which looked over the backyard. On Thursday, though, it couldn't be helped. It was sunny and warm. My brothers wanted to play outside, and Charlie was probably tired of us making a mess inside our house already. I remember sliding my shoes back on and standing in front of the back door, waiting for Charlie to finish helping my youngest brother, who was only about 3 at the time, put his shoes and jacket on. I don't know exactly what was going through my head as I stared at the tall white door in the back of the kitchen, but I remember thinking about the fact that the lady who had scared me so much was on the other side of the fence. She was all the way up by the trees, and I was in the yard, separated by 20 to 30 yards of a chain-link fence. No one else was scared. No one else could even see her, as far as I knew. When Charlie opened the door, I marched right across the yard and up to the fence. I don't know what I was thinking it would prove, but I wanted her to know she didn't scare me anymore. She wasn't green anymore. Her skin looked almost red, at least all the parts that I could see. Sort of like a bad sunburn, but darker in colour. She was even more dirty than she had been the last time I saw her, with dirt caked all over her legs and in her hair. Her dress barely looked blue anymore. She wasn't crying anymore. She wasn't really moving at all. Her head was tipped a bit to the side and facing slightly down. And she just stared at the ground without her eyes. So I just watched her. I watched her stand there, as still as the trees, until it was time for me to go home. It felt a bit like a magic spell or a ritual of some kind. She couldn't do anything to me if I watched her. The next day, I did it again, and I would have done it the following day as well if it hadn't been the weekend. Now, as an adult, I'm very aware that this was not a normal thing for a child to do. I wish I could remember exactly what was going through my head. When Monday rolled around, and I fell into the third day of this routine, after I'd abandoned the games everyone else was playing and took up my pose at the edge of the yard, little fingers clutching the wire of the fence, she stared back at me. I watched her finally turn her head, messy, muddy strings of hair shifting out of the way of her face, like she had only just noticed that I, or anything else, was there. It's a weird feeling, knowing someone is looking at you, like you can feel it on your skin. At this time, I wasn't quite used to this feeling yet. At least I could see her, the thing looking at me. For a while, that's all she did. She turned her head and stared, much in the same way that I was staring. When, at first, looking at her had just made me scared, looking at her now and making weird, one-sided eye contact with her made me feel almost sad. It was a particularly lonely feeling, like a shallow despair sliding down your spine and settling like stones in your stomach. I don't know what I felt sad for. Maybe for her, or maybe everything else. Either way, it killed whatever terrified thoughts that I'm sure I would have had previously. It wasn't until she lifted her arm, her movements slow and almost painful looking, until her hand was in the air, and she was waving at me, that my trance was broken and I backed away from the fence. With her arm up in the air, I could see more clearly that at least one of her fingers was completely missing. There were entire chunks of flesh missing from that arm as well, like something had bitten it right off of her. I can't really remember what happened afterwards. I remember feeling distinctly like I was in a dream, and all the details of that particular evening are very fuzzy. It was almost like I was standing in Charlie's backyard one moment, and then brushing my teeth after dinner at home the next, even though the two things must have happened hours apart. The only thing I remember clearly was the woman. Seeing her face, the emotions I felt from looking at her, all the parts of her that were so wrong and sad. That night, after I'd already climbed into bed and was halfway to falling asleep, I found myself thinking of the woman by the trees. I don't know what to call her. Person, ghost, something else. I knew that people, regular people, didn't look like that. And, as far as I knew, I had never seen a ghost or a monster in real life before. In my head, she was just a lady by the trees. I could so clearly picture her in my head, her face plastered on the back of my eyelids like I was staring at a picture, or she was standing right in front of me. A perfect portrait of her standing stock still, soft blue dress and waterfall of pretty hair, not quite staring at me, but looking straight ahead. Before I knew it, I was asleep and dreaming, and she was still there. Just like in real life, she never moved much, but she would twist her head and lean forward and look around like she was searching. I didn't know what for. I could never move either. It was like I was watching her through a camera instead of standing in front of her. It felt like I stared at her for hours upon hours with nothing else happening until I woke up. The next day was my usual routine, and the next night had the same dream. This time, just before waking up, I watched as she looked down at her feet and took a small step forward. Wednesday was the same. Thursday was the same. By Friday, the dream version of the woman was walking freely, still searching for something I didn't know about. On Saturday, I was grateful to not be at Charlie's and see her in person, but that didn't stop the dreams. On Sunday, the woman was crying as she ran, and by Monday, after getting home from Charlie's, I was begging my mom to let me stay up later so I wouldn't have to go to sleep. My mother was, as usual, not having any of that. If there was one thing in my house that was always enforced, it was curfews and bedtimes. My mom took a little extra time calming me down with a dinosaur book before bed, tucking me in as gently as she could. She flicked the lights off and closed the door as she left, but I refused to close my eyes and sleep. I held my stuffed rabbit in my arms, a cold feeling settling over me once I was alone in my room and confronted with the fact that I would have to sleep. At the time, my house was old. It settled a lot, as old houses do. I should have been somewhat used to the noises. But that night, the second I heard a creaking sound, I flung my blankets over my head and buried my face in the fur of my stuffed rabbit. The house went quiet after a few seconds, and my heartbeat stopped racing. Every once in a while, the house sat silent for a few minutes, if not a full hour. I couldn't sleep. I was on edge, forcing myself to stay awake for fear of what the lady would be doing in my dreams tonight. I had thought I was brave, and could show her I wasn't afraid of her. But I was. I was tired of seeing her every day and every night. The house started groaning and settling again, and I clutched my bunny even tighter. Only this time, the low, crackling groaning didn't let up. As it rang around inside my head, less of an old wood foundation groan and more of a localized, hollow whine, I realized it didn't sound like the house at all. I couldn't place what it sounded like either, but it wasn't the house. I peeked over the edge of the blanket, using my free hand to pull the comforter down over my eyes, while my other arm clutched my stuffed bunny to my chest with a deathly grip. My room was dark, save for the very dim glow of the planet-themed nightlight I had on the wall next to my bedroom door. It was an old light, and the cover on it, themed to look like some planet with a rocket ship circling it, was a little too opaque for the light to shine through it well. It illuminated the bottom third of the door, and the corner of my bookshelf, which stood on the other side of it, and maybe a foot into the room with a soft, dark blue glow. The tiny bit of illumination made it harder for my eyes to adjust to the darkness. But the light was landing on something. Not quite in the middle of the floor, but near enough. Close enough to the light that it caught my attention. The longer I looked at it, blinking sleep and a creeping blur of fear out of my eyes, I decided slowly that it wasn't my discarded clothes, or a book, or a toy. It was someone's feet. The realization froze me, immediately, as I stared at the bare toes, just dipping into the blue light like water. There wasn't a scream trapped in my throat, too caught off guard to even think about it at the time, but my breath caught in my lungs and my knees locked. My eyes followed the shape of the legs up, out of the circle of light, and into the waiting darkness where he was standing. The legs were misshapen, hard to make out in the dark, and as my line of sight got to the hem of the skirt it was wearing, I realized it was because long gouges of skin and flesh were missing. I couldn't make out the color of the dress in the dark, but the shapes were familiar. By the time my eyes glossed over the cupped hands held in front of the figure with missing fingers and dangling flesh, I knew it was the lady from the trees. She didn't look at me for a long time, instead tilting her head down and staring into her own cupped hands, her jaw hung open and loose, as it had been for days, if not weeks. I was petrified. I had never seen her anywhere aside from the trees in my dreams, and I knew this wasn't a dream. She was so close to me now, barely a few feet away, standing barefoot and dirty in the center of my room. When she did look up, her movements were slow, and I realized that the low sound that had made me look up in the first place was her, groaning in a low hum as she moved. It came from deep in the back of her throat, scratchy and guttural at the same time. My heartbeat picked up as she looked up enough that her eyes, if she had any, would have met mine, and she held her cupped hands out. Her other fingers were shaking as she pulled them slowly apart, and a series of small objects clattered to the floor, hardly making any noise as they bounced off the carpet in all different directions. Her teeth. She dropped her own teeth all over my floor, a terrible pain sound coming from her own mangled mouth as they rolled and bounced to a stop all over my floor. I shrieked, finally finding the courage to launch myself out of bed and towards the door, scrambling to fling the door open and run sobbing to my parents' room. Even after my dad went into my room to check and assured me there was no one and nothing in there except my own things, I refused to go back in. I fell asleep due to pure terrified exhaustion late that night, cuddled in between them after a cup of hot chocolate and Land Before Time movie. I woke up in my own bed and assumed my dad had carried me back at some point in the night. I think my alarm had been turned off, because I never woke up on my own on school days. It was always too early. When I got out of bed, my brothers weren't even awake yet, but my parents were in the kitchen. We didn't go to school that day, which also meant we didn't go back to Charlie's. None of us asked why, and were pretty excited not to go to school for the day. But we didn't go to Charlie's the next day either, or the next, or the next. My older brother asked about it on the third day, when my mum picked us up from school, and watched us at home for a few hours. But the only answer we got was that Charlie's daycare would be closed for a few days. By the time we did go back to Charlie's, nearly 2 full weeks later, I had stopped having dreams about the lady by the trees. I never saw her by the trees again, no matter how many times I would stand by the back fence and stare. Eventually, her memory faded into the background of my life. I was nearly 15 before I found out who she was. I had nearly forgotten about the woman, whatever she was, in the 7 or 8 years since I saw her in my room, until I had a dream about her one night, completely out of the blue. I hadn't had a dream about her since the night I saw her, standing in the center of my room, cupping her teeth in her own mangled hands. I saw her, just like the first time, strawberry blonde hair, pretty gold earrings, soft blue sundress. She hugged me like we were old friends, and when I looked up at her soft, pretty face, I saw her decay right before my eyes. Her eyes disintegrated, her skin turned pale, then green, then red. And when she smiled at me, her teeth fell right out of her hands as her jaw went slack. Soon enough, the woman who was hugging me was nothing more than yellowing bones as the last remnants of her flesh practically liquefied. The whole time I stared at her, and even without her eyes, I knew she was staring back at me. By the end, I was cradling her skull in my hands. When I woke up, everything felt a little surreal. I couldn't believe I'd forgotten her. I wasn't fully convinced that I hadn't made it all up, but I finally broke down and told my mom about it, and told her everything. I described the girl I saw in vivid detail, like I had only seen her yesterday, and that I had saw her in the paper. I told her that Charlie didn't see her, and my brother didn't see her, even though she was right there. I even told her about the dream, when she asked where all this had come from. My mom turned to her phone and didn't say anything for nearly 5 minutes as I sat on the opposite end of the dining table and watched her, my mug of tea going cold in front of me. She typed away, scrolled and typed some more, before she finally set her phone on the table and slid it across to me. On her phone was a digital copy of a missing persons poster, zoomed in a bit on the photograph on the left side of all the text. The photo itself had clearly been zoomed in and cropped, because there were two people who had been cut halfway out of the picture, but still had their arms around the girl in the center. A girl who had flowy, long, strawberry blonde hair and a blue sundress with lace details. She was smiling, nice and wide, like she was laughing, and had pearly white teeth. Above her picture was the question, "Have you seen Tonya?" It all but pushed me straight down the rabbit hole of the mystery that surrounded the local girl's disappearance and death. Tonya Heflin was abducted on a walk home from a dinner party, then murdered and dismembered deep in the woods at the back of Tenwood. She was buried, barely, in the woods there for a few days. She was later dug up and taken out to the middle of an empty field where her remains were scattered, susceptible to the weather, the bugs and the animals. This was where she laid for nearly a month, alone and rotting. No one was ever tried for a murder. Every suspect fell through, either from severe lack of evidence or corroborated alibis. The order of the events leading up to her death were just what the police could put together based on where her body was found, and scraps of her bloody dress and ripped out hair found amongst the foliage in the forest. When her body was finally found, and a trail was traced back to the woods behind Charlie's house, Charlie closed the daycare down for a week or two, afraid that the presence of the police and the dogs would upset the children. I never knew Tonya Heflin, before she died. From what I could find in memorialized Facebook pages and practically ancient newspapers, she was a dental hygienist who had lived in Tenwood for less than 2 years. My whole family went to the dentist in Tenwood, but all the little kids had a different hygienist, so I never met her. Tanya was in her mid-20s when she died. She had, apparently, moved out to Tenwood mysteriously and out of the blue, all the way from some big city in another state. It had still been light out when she started walking home, as her co-worker and friends had attested, because she had left early. Police theorized she was dead before nightfall. By the time she was found, she had been in the middle of the field for at least a month, and what had been left of her had been picked over by scavengers. So, I never knew Tanya Heflin, but she was the first ghost I ever saw.
Back to School mit Kick. Nur diese Woche. So viel mehr Power für die Schule.
Sichere dir jetzt mit deiner MyKick-Vorteilskarte zum Schulstart 20% Rabatt auf unser vielseitiges Sortiment an Schreib-, Schul- und Bastelbedarf. Auch online auf kick.de.
Nur jetzt und nur bei Kick. Mehr als du denkst.